and he made it permanent.
Hello, you are listening to Stirring the Pot podcast and live radio show broadcasting from KVSHLP on Vashon Island, Washington. I'm Linda Nygaard, and I'll be your host today with my co-host, Tom Conway.
Hey, thank you. You know, I, first when you were talking, I felt like you're doing that Saturday Night Live skit where we're shveddy balls, you know, the one that goes like, we're having
Tom.
Sorry. But it was very polite. It was very polite. You were sort of like, now today we have on NPR, we have a special guest who owns a bakery in town.
Yes, we do. We do. Well, actually, we don't. For you out there.
That's right.
It was a joke.
I'll say it was a joke, son.
Oh, Foghorn Leghorn. Uh-huh. Wasn't he the best?
He was.
And with us in the studio is Truman O'Brien, who's our trusty engineer.
I'm sitting here behind a big red switch.
Yes, he's got the switch.
And he's the brains behind.
He really is. Yeah. Hi, Truman.
We're in trouble.
Thanks. Yeah, I'm glad you're here.
Thanks.
Well, I guess we would start out by talking about the weather.
It's fabulous.
It's not.
You know, I have a friend of mine who texts me often about the weather, and mm-hmm. I go, you grew up here.
You know?
It's like you're acting shocked.
Well, we've all been here long enough not to be shocked, but it is a shock, you know, in November because we've had such a beautiful fall.
Uh-huh.
And then we had a gorgeous day. Was it yesterday? It was a beautiful day. It turned out beautifully in the afternoon. And then it's just kind of shocking around Thanksgiving when it gets all gray and awful. And thank God for Turkey Day because, you know.
Yeah. And also for like, it is that thing. There's what's the Norwegian term for heggy, where you like sort of your, a concerted effort of quiet winter behavior.
Oh, yes.
I don't know if that's the word.
I don't know what that word is.
But for me, I kind of like it because I'm usually outside working.
Well, you can dig in.
And so I can be mm-hmm. inside doing stuff and mm-hmm. I can find a bunch of sweaters that I find, oh, the moths have gotten to those too. And I look like
actually that is one thing I look forward to in autumn is getting those sweaters and sweatshirts out.
Exactly. I get my layer on. I find my goofy little caps to keep my bald little head warm. And it's a little bit of a ritual. And again, I'm always shocked every year when I go like, oh, this is why I like cotton sweaters, because the wool sweaters are just in a matter of one season. No, they're just fraught with moth holes.
They are.
Yeah.
At your house.
Yeah.
Not at mine.
Well.
But I keep them all year in the cedar chest. So maybe that's why.
Well, there you go.
You know.
Yeah. I rolled up. I have a car. This is kind of the little side note, but I had this really beautiful wool rug and I was mm-hmm. working on a room that it was in. And so mm-hmm. I rolled it up and then it took me a while to get it back in to the room. And it was like a cartoon. It was like a Disney cartoon. I unrolled it and like a million moths came flying out. And then you're looking down and there are all these little mini moths that have just eaten the heck out of the warp and the waft and the weft and the waft. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So you're just looking at it. Well, sort of the irony of it is they never kind of went away. I can't get them out of that rug. So the other night I turned on the light to go in the room and it was moth explosion.
<cloud.
laughs> I'm going, where are you hiding?
And what do you do? How do you do that?
I don't know.
I know that people use mothballs, but man, do they smell bad.
No, I was
then
using
your whole house smells like
baking.
Them.
I thought baking soda might dry it. And then I tried diatomaceous earth, which is, you know, like crushed seashells, ancient seashells. And it's like looks like powdered sugar. And I think that's finally done it. But I had to just do sections and keep my dog out of it. So,
sure.
Because it gets in your eyes and your, mm-hmm. it's sort of.
And he's so short.
He licks his paws. Yeah. So there you go.
Oh, wow.
Life in the fast lane.
Life in the fast lane in the wintertime. That's right. I haven't seen a moth in a while.
Come over to my house, man.
Yeah.
I'm gonna double down. I'm gonna buy just some there's gotta be natural products that are lures. They lure them into it and then they get stuck in the sticky paper or something.
And there are so many different kinds of moths.
Yeah.
But these are the nasty
ones. These aren't pretty.
These are not nice.
These look like if you were whittling like shaved wood.
Oh, yeah.
Hey, how's that for visual?
That's a good visual.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Should we talk about food again?
Well, sure. I'm always interested in talking about food since that's what the show's supposed
right.
to be about.
Stirring the moth.
Or the local gossip that we know, but we don't know any, really.
And I'm clutching pearls, and we do not gossip.
No, we don't. We tell stories.
We tell stories.
But we don't gossip.
Never.
That's right. Mm-mm. Well, so what you been doing, Tom?
Oh, my gosh. I was working on a couple articles for The Beachcomber.
Oh, right. That's great. Yeah.
They were kind enough to reach out and they said, oh, we remember you do a bunch of, in the past, I've done recipes and cooking articles for them and like the seasonal.
Yeah, you're such a good writer, Tom.
Oh, thank you.
Good writer.
Thanks. And inserts in the paper and stuff. And so, and ended up, they said, well, can you do two recipes? And I was going like, and I politely said, well, sure. But you know, I have to like, cook it, make it, take the pictures. Oh, and I have to write it.
Yeah.
They go, yeah. Can you do it? And I go, yeah, sure, I can do it.
Well, of course.
But it's funny because it's sort of my leisurely, my days are determined by my own sloth and energy level. And so it's like, oh, I have a deadline.
Uh-huh. So, well, it's good to have deadlines.
It is really good to have a deadline.
I know when I was a freelance writer all those years ago and did all that writing, it's how I made my living. Mm-hmm. I don't care what happened. Mm-hmm. The deadline drove the work.
Yeah.
It's like, maybe it's an ADD thing. Maybe it's just, you know, lazy. I don't know what it is. But until that deadline got really close, I would think about it.
Yeah.
I'd do a little bit of research. Mm-hmm. But the actual work was literally down to the 11th hour.
Exactly. You know? That's exactly what happened
to
me,
too. But I
think
that's when I do my best work like that, really.
I think we learn it in school.
Yeah,
really.
Maybe.
Like, you remember, like, it's like, you go, oh, Mom, I can't do that. I got a book report. She goes, when's it due? I go, tomorrow. And she's going, how long did you have to do it? Well, like 3 months, you know. Mm-hmm, and so, and we get it done. But I did a couple things. I did one, they ask about a gift list, shopping locally in Vashon.
Oh, good.
And so I enlisted I have a Facebook page that my late mayor dog buddy started called Thank You Vashon.
Yeah,
and so
I
reached out to the people on that page and said, what are some really, you know, great ideas for gifts buying locally on the island? Mm-hmm. So I think we have 85 suggestions.
Wow.
And so I just sort of edited those a little bit and fixed them up. And
so that's going to be in the Beachcomber?
Yeah.
Oh,
it'll probably
good.
Be, I think, in this issue or closer to Christmas, but it'll be there sooner than later. And then there were two recipes I did. I did a chocolate orange tort.
Mm.
And the good thing about this is just because I apologize for being careless about it. I don't really think in terms of gluten free.
Yeah,
so
I know.
This is gluten free, which is great.
Oh,
And it's so I was glad I could contribute that one because a lot of people it really helps them if they don't have gluten. And so it's basically chocolate and eggs and almond flour, and then you put a ganache on top. But you're flavoring it with either orange juice, orange rind, and zest. Or you can do a liqueur like Cointreau or Triple Sec.
I do
Grand Marnier.
Yes, of course.
Exactly.
Did you have a snifter of it too while you were at it?
Oh, heck yes, honey.
It's so good.
Tommy had a good time. Yeah. I love these recipes. They're the best. You know, and I do. I'm like, it's if I was filmed, like, you know, if you had like a hidden camera, it would be you'd be an embarrassment, but viral on the internet because I'm sitting there like I'm in an ascot and a smoking jacket, swirling a brandy sniffer, you know, in my boxer shorts, going, this is so delicious,
lovely, lovely, so lovely. Gorgeous. Yeah.
I say, where's Jim? Please come over here and join me. Get my cigars, you know.
Do you have any Grey Poupon?
I have Grey Poupon. So that was one recipe. And then the other one was one that I've taken to from the first time I had it this summer, semifreddo, and I made that, and that's going to be a recipe featured in the Beachcomber in the next issue or the next after that.
Mm-hmm.
And what's so great about semifreddo is you're basically making an ice cream dessert without the use of an ice cream maker.
I love that. You know, we talked about that a little bit last summer when we were so hot and we wanted ice cream, and it was really,
this is it.
You know, people don't, a lot of people don't have an ice cream machine.
Yeah.
I don't. I mean, I don't have room for it, but the Semifreddo. So I...
Which means semi-frozen or semi-cold, mm-hmm. I think.
Freddo,
freezer, yeah.
Yeah. Well, those...
Are you speaking Norwegian again?
For those of you who don't know, Tom and I talk on the phone a lot, and... The description that you gave me of the Semifreddo put me in a coma because it was so good. I mean, I felt like I had eaten it, you know? So let's tell about that recipe.
Oh, yeah. It's what's so great about it is it's kind of a marriage of two things, like whipped cream, like a really frothy, wonderful whipped cream.
Until stiff. Okay.
And then you fold it into basically kind of a modified ice cream custard.
Mm-hmm.
And if you think, oh, this sounds complicated, it really isn't. It's basically that custard is simply a certain amount of eggs in sugar, and you're just whipping them over a double boiler. So you have them in a pan, and the pan is not touching the water, but the steam up from a boiling pan heats it up, and you just heat it up to like 165. And 165 is a low temperature. It's enough to cook the egg and get it really frothy.
Mm.
And then you just whip that in your mixer and get it frothy.
Or
then,
using a whole egg? Whole egg?
Yeah, whole eggs, exactly. Yeah. And then you do have a couple egg yolks, I believe. I'm trying to remember the recipe off the top of my head.
But I think we should post this recipe on the Stirring the Pot page.
Absolutely.
Because, you know, and the secret ingredient that you put in it
this time,
please.
So this time, I will fully admit I'm not like a great, I'm a recipe modifier, a recipe adapter. I'm not like somebody that, I don't come up with my, you know, if I was building houses, I would do a great interior and the roof would look fantastic. You know, I can modify, I get nice windows, you know, but I don't necessarily build the house. So with recipes, I just sort of modify them with things I think that would sort of enhance them or make them better. So this recipe, I took things out of it. So we just got the base of it. And then I got a can of dulce de leche, which is a milk-based caramel that comes in a can. It looks like, when you're looking at the cans, they look like sweetened condensed milk cans, but they're basically sweetened condensed milk that has been heated to become a caramel.
Mm-hmm. Do you remember doing that boiling thing when you boil the cans for 2 hours and you'd get caramel?
Yeah.
Isn't it nice that they have it already done for you?
Yeah, now you can get it. Because that's a little... I don't like boiling things in a pressure-based container.
I kind of do. It's kind of daring.
Yeah, it is daring.
Like, is it going to swell up and pop?
Yeah, pop and cover your face. Yeah. And then you go, where did Tom get all those welts?
And what is that on the ceiling?
Why does he look like the surface of the moon now? So I did a half a can of that in there to flavor it, sort of the body of it.
Mm-hmm.
And it has such a lovely caramel flavor. But then what you do is you fold the whipped cream and the custard together, and then you pour it into like a loaf pan, like a bread loaf pan. And usually there's parchment or plastic in it because it makes it easier to get it out. But then halfway, you just do half of it. And then I did dollops of the remaining dulce de leche, which is basically like a soft caramel throughout that layer. And then this is when you listen to the universe. Just the day before, I was over at friend's house who had just been to, and we have to talk about this.
I know.
About the outlet store for
Almond Roca.
Yeah, who's that? Brown and Haley? Yeah, it's their outlet store. And they had a whole bunch of Almond Roca that was, they were seconds, like broken or something else. So I thought, I'll crunch up.
Mm-hmm.
But I had to go buy them. First rate retail. But then I crunched them up in a bag with a rolling pin, and then I sprinkled that on top of the dulce de leche.
So that's a little Heath Bar-y kind of.
Yeah, it is. Yeah. It is, but it has really nice because it does crunch without sticking to your teeth in a in a crazy way.
Yeah.
And then I put the rest of the semifreddo on top of it, and then you put it in the freezer for a day is good. Really get it solid, and then the next day you take the loaf pan, turn it upside down, give it a few minutes, maybe five, and then you pull it off and then pull the wrapper off and then you slice it like
slice
a loaf.
It. Yeah.
It's like slicing meatloaf.
Yeah.
But it's so flipping good.
Well, you know, that's a wonderful idea as an alternative for a Thanksgiving dessert.
Yeah.
Because it'd be really different. You know, and you could get creative with oranges and cranberries.
Oh, you could
do, just do all kinds of things.
Yeah, you could leave out the dulce de leche, and you could do. You're right. You could do a cranberry sauce,
or you could do pumpkin. You could do you know that whole thing too.
What's great is you can kind of control the flavor
as long as you have the two main components.
Right, and you're
making the custard and the cream.
Right, and you make that base for it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's really, you know, it's. I'm not one to say, "Oh, that's too rich." I don't think I've ever said that in my life. I do a silent eye roll when people say that, like, "Oh, this is so rich."
And I'm when they say, "Could you make this fat-free?"
Uh-huh.
Or can I use less sugar?
I know we need to start a little group, like a support group for people. Like, you can eat stuff without having to apologize for it. Like,
right.
You know, like, "Oh, I think if I eat half of it, it's half the calorie." And you're going, "Oh, stop it!
Just stop.
Shove that cake in your mouth and go for it."
I know. One time, I have a little side story talking about eating a lot.
Uh-huh.
My dad was in the 70s and he was having heart surgery back when they, you know, it was pretty new procedure they were doing. And he had this form he had to fill out in the hospital. And that's back when you didn't have the computer. You did it all by hand and you check this box and write that down. And one of the questions on there was, do you consider yourself a heavy eater, a medium eater, or a light eater? And he marked light. And I said, "Dad, you're not a light eater. You like to eat. You love food."
Fred
My mom
Flintstone.
Was, yeah. And he wasn't fat. I mean, he wasn't overweight, but he loved food and he ate, you know. And he said, "Well, I am too a light eater." And I said, "How do you figure that out?" And he said, "I don't eat half as much as I could."
That's great.
And, you know, so really,
yeah,
eat it. Enjoy it.
Uh-huh.
Have fun. We will post that recipe.
Yeah,
on the Facebook page.
And what's so great is it doesn't melt as quickly as ice cream. You can have it out.
I was going to ask you, but is it going to be a puddle on my plate when I serve it?
No, that's what's great is it has a tendency to almost be it's sort of self insulating.
Mm.
The whipped cream and that custard, it stays on the plate and
they marry.
What's that?
They marry.
They marry nicely. Mm-hmm. They do.
Mm-hmm.
They're on their honeymoon.
Well, did you save me a slice? You said you would.
You know, I did, but then I had to bring a dessert somewhere, and I think we... Oh, but you know what? Wait, let's back up. I wanted to make it fresh for you.
Oh, thank you.
You're welcome.
You're so kind. You're so thoughtful, Tom.
That's
wonderful. Well, I baked something recently that I haven't done in a long, long time. I made a Swiss roll. Pumpkin, what else do we call those things? There's another name for them, like
you mean
a jelly roll.
A jelly roll,
olden days, that's what they used to call them, was a jelly roll. Yeah. And now, you know, all the chefs are saying Swiss roll. It's the same thing.
Mm.
And I made a pumpkin one.
Nice.
Oh, it was so good. And
how big's your tray that you do the basic?
10 by 15.
Oh, okay.
It's 10 by 15 and it's only, what? An inch deep.
Mm-hmm.
It's like a half sheet.
Oh, and they call them a jelly roll pan, don't they?
Do they?
Yeah.
I don't know. This is a half sheet pan.
In my neck of the island.
Okay.
Hey, you got it? Can I borrow your jelly roll pan?
Hey, jelly roll Morton.
That's right.
So it was really fun to make. I used to make those when I was a kid, and I didn't know that they were such an art form. You know, it was sort of like my mom would be having company or something. Linda, why don't you make a jelly roll? And I go, "Oh, okay, what kind? I don't care." You know, so there's always some homemade jam, some, I don't know, lemon thing that I would make. And so I made one. I was going to dinner somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I was going to dinner at my friend's house. And they asked me to bring dessert, of course.
Mm-hmm.
So I did. And I just put a cream cheese filling on it. And, you know, part of the fun of making a jelly roll, Swiss roll.
Cream cheese filling. I'm sorry to interrupt, but Just cream cheese?
Just cream cheese and something else. Oh, a little cream. And I beat it up with something, maybe some spices. I think I put some cinnamon and stuff in it.
Gotcha.
Yeah. And then, you know, when it's done, you flip it immediately onto your wire rack and it falls out of the pan. I mean, you have to use parchment paper, of course.
Yeah.
And then let it, don't let it cool too much and sprinkle. You have a tea towel on the counter and you smother it in powdered sugar. And then you flip your jelly roll pan on top of that. And then you roll.
This is what I was waiting for.
Yeah. Then you take the towel, tea towel, and roll it up with the jelly roll.
Oh, so it kind of creates a memory in the cake.
Yes. And it keeps it tight.
Keeps it tight.
And you roll it pretty tight. And then you should let it sit for a few hours at least.
Mm-hmm.
Overnight is okay. If you wrap it again, wrap it in Saran or something. I put it in the fridge to speed it up.
But now, wait, is there filling in it already?
No, not yet. Okay. No, gotcha. you're just rolling it up to make the roll.
Okay, so.
So then you
just
get
the cakey part.
Just the cakey part. Then you get it out of the fridge or, you know, wherever you put it and delicately unroll it.
Mm-hmm.
And then it's kind of curved at the end.
Mm-hmm.
And your filling should be pretty soft, kind of custardy, kind of.
Yeah.
Like you don't want hard cream cheese. That's why there was some cream and some powdered sugar.
Then it becomes a trifle.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Well, you can't, you know. I mean, worse things have happened. Yeah.
Could you use mascarpone?
No, I didn't use any mascarpone.
But could you?
You could.
Yeah.
Absolutely, you could. Yeah. Okay. You can. Lemon is good. Any kind. It could have grated some orange zest into the cream cheese. I mean, there's any number of things you can do. But you want to add enough cream and powdered sugar to make it a sweet, spready consistency. And then you just spread that gooey, lovely stuff all over the top of it and roll it up again. That part can be a little bit tricky because it's fatter. So it's a little more difficult to roll.
Yeah, and you don't want to squeeze out the goo.
Right.
Goo.
Well, some of the goo comes out anyway, just because of the nature of the roll.
Sure.
But then you place it seam side down on your platter. And I put a cream cheese maple frosting on the top.
Oh, nice.
Oh, that was good. It was very good.
Is it one you use a knife to put on, or do you just drizzle it?
I drizzled it because I made it pretty runny.
Okay.
Because I didn't want to do the knife because of the crumb thing.
Do you know, that sounds that sounds delicious. And it reminds me of my neighbor across the street, Phoebe. Her family, the one side is Norwegian descent. And she used to make this for him and all her kids every birthday, and they said it was like the Norwegian roll. So apparently,
it's the same kind of thing.
I take that back. Actually, it was the happy birthday, but they told me that it was from the Norwegian side of the family, and they did everything you said except where the whipped cream was involved.
Oh yeah, you can fill it with just whipped cream.
They did the whipped cream and the. Fruit. They took like it's usually seasonal fruit, like strawberries, berries, strawberries, raspberries, blueberries, and they would put that on top of the whipped cream and then roll it and have it with fruit inside the whipped cream, fresh fruit. And then they would do the drizzle with a really lovely chocolate.
Mm-hmm.
And that was kind of their birthday thing. Every birthday that was served.
That sounds lovely.
It was really
and you
good.
Would do the sponge would be more like white cake
it would be
or
more white. Yes.
Lemony or something lighter, something much lighter.
Exactly.
Yeah, it was good.
But that's a great dessert.
So now I want to try a Yule log because really it's the same thing. What do they call that?
Oh, it's in concept. I think it's a much more complex.
It really isn't. I was reading recipes.
Really?
And it's really, I mean, it is.
In what, like teen cookbook or something? I mean, this is like.
No, it's a Swiss roll. It's really just a chocolate Swiss roll.
But it's more about usually like the French version, the Bouche
de Noël. Yes.
They have like a d'acquoise. They have like a nut meringue that I mean, there's a little more to it.
There's a little more to it, but it's still the basic Swiss roll. You still make the cake. You still unroll it. You still do all of that. But there is, you know, you have to make mushrooms.
Yeah, you have to do a decoration. That's true.
Yeah, you have to do
the decoration
to make it look
like a log.
Yeah. And so I think I'm going to try it at Christmas time, and when and if I do, I'll send you a photograph because it might be kind of funny. I don't know. I've never done one.
You know, isn't it interesting, Truman, that she'd send us a photo? It's a piece of, it's food. It's an 18-inch.
I was thinking that,
5-pound dessert. Yeah. And she's going to send us a photo.
Well, it's just pure meanness.
Well,
is all
no,
it, is.
It would totally be embarrassing so. If it was a flop, is what I'm saying. You know, you could have a photo for a few laughs.
And but, who are your two biggest supporters?
Yeah. Us. Okay. All right. I'll share it. Okay. I'll bring it in December, and we'll see what happens.
By the way, I did look up a Jelly Roll pan.
Yeah?
And it is a real thing.
The Jelly Roll pan?
Yeah.
I don't have one. I just use a half sheet pan.
Yeah, they're great, those little Jelly Roll pans.
Yeah. I did that. That was really fun.
That's a good, we had, those are some killer desserts there we got there going.
I think so, yeah. I want to talk about cooking just a little bit.
Sure.
Which is probably a good idea. I did do something very interesting in the savory realm. You know, because we talk a lot about baking because we both have a terrible sweet tooth.
Yes.
We just can't get enough sugar and butter.
We should devote a whole show to broccoli.
Or Brussels sprouts.
Brussels sprouts.
Salad.
Get your cauliflower salad. On. Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Well, I made a thing called, have you ever heard of a Mississippi roast? Have you ever heard of such a thing? I hadn't either. And so I decided, I was reading a recipe and I thought, okay, I'm going to try this. And oh my gosh. So it's a crock pot thing.
Okay.
And you get a four or five pound chuck roast and sear it, brown it like you do. And then in there, you put sliced onions, and this is kind of embarrassing to even admit, but this is how you make it. You dump a packet of dry ranch dressing in there, a packet of au jus mix, or French onion soup, about 10 chopped up peperoncini, and about a half a cup of peperoncini juice. And then you put the lid on it and you let it cook for, I think, 8 hours on low.
Wow.
And then the meat it's shredded. Uh-huh. It pretty much is self-shredding. Oh, it is so good. It's so good. And I couldn't believe it was that good with those things in it. But I thought I'd try it, you know, and see. So I highly recommend it. You should have some serve it with noodles.
The packets or...
ranch dressing mix.
Ranch dressing packet and a French
au jus or French onion soup mix.
Okay.
And the peperoncini. And that's it. It is so good.
Oh, no.
I would serve it for dinner and I just wouldn't tell people what was in it. That it was so easy to make and you just throw this stuff in there.
And you put it on noodles. Or mashed potatoes. No, that sounds really good. For this weather, the perfect dish. And plus, you just put it in a crock pot and leave it overnight.
And then walk away.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I have to get my crock pot out. I got one of those fancy Instapots, but I think I just like my crock pot better.
You know, I gave my Instapot away.
I think I'm about ready to.
I did. I like my crock pot.
Yeah.
Really. And then between my air fryer and my crock pot, I'm set. The Instapot. It was kind of a rage for a while.
Yeah.
You know, it was one of those things that they sold us on and we all did it. And now we're like, oh.
Yeah.
Wasn't that big of a deal.
I know.
Yeah. Although some people use it all the time. So.
They do. It's just sort of how you like to cook, too.
And I think if you have a family and you have kids and, you know, you want something a little faster and more savory, delicious, stewy thing. But I happen to have all the time in the world to let it sit. And what's wrong with letting it sit all day?
Yeah, nothing.
You just walk away and do other stuff.
You know, now here's my savory recipe. I just saw this today. Mm-hmm. I was looking for like easy stuff to do, like sort of one pan things.
Mm-hmm.
And this was really unusual, it was great because a lot of times I like to get in the rushes and make everything and,
I know.
Milk the cow.
We both are like that. Yeah. Like to just everything.
But then there's
the whole process.
But that's not always. Trust me. It's just that's just on occasion. And then other occasions it go like, there's got to be a jar for this. And so this was a recipe. She's online, and gosh, I can't remember. I'll remember her name in a minute. But it was her recipe for gnocchi.
Mm.
And so she takes shelf-stable gnocchi that you can get, and like 2 packages. So it's probably, 32 ounces or something. And and a couple tablespoons of olive oil. And she sears them so they get a little bit of a crusty outside to them. And then she takes two cans of corn.
Corn.
And then she puts them in there and she mixes it all up. And then she takes dollops of a jarred pesto and puts that in throughout and sort of does a swirl of pesto throughout it, covers it with low-fat mozzarella, and then broils it.
No.
And it says it's really good. You know, I
corn.
Think...
Corn.
You know, speaking...
I'm puzzled at the corn.
Yeah, the corn. Well, I think it could work. But what I would do is do one can of regular corn and one
creamy
can of cream corn.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So I'll have that for next show. I'm writing it down. Tom, make that.
Yeah, you make that. That would be good. You know, corn is like something that... you either love or not.
Yes.
And I happen to love corn. So
I do too.
My family used to make a corn dish that was the easiest, best corn you'll ever have. And all it is a can of corn and a tub of soft cream cheese and some chopped up jalapenos and some chopped up red peppers. And you put that in a little casserole and bake it. Oh, it's so good.
Sounds good.
And it's easy.
I have a question, though.
Yeah.
I haven't been able to find niblets lately. You know?
Oh, the little niblets.
It's like Jolly Green Giant niblets.
Niblets.
Yeah, are they going away?
You know, I think they've replaced those with, like, white corn in the freezer section. Like, I haven't seen them in cans.
It's the best. Actually, that's what the recipe that my mom used to make called for was a can of niblets.
Yeah. Because they're real crunchy. And,
oh, they're so good.
Yeah.
Oh, probably frozen now.
And that was the Jolly Green Giant.
I know.
It was.
Yeah, I think. I'm pretty sure.
I was so tall in grade school. That's what the kids used to call me.
Oh.
I was Jolly Green Giant.
And you're damaged forever.
I'm damaged forever. I think I walked around slouching, you know, through about sixth grade. And
they
then,
go like, hey, where are your leotards?
And then it became, okay, I'm tall. I might as well get used to it, you know?
Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah, so that's a little bit off the beaten
it
track.
It is,
there.
But we'll have a little support group later on.
Thank you, thank you. I would like that. And so we're coming up to Thanksgiving. We were going to talk a little bit about that.
Yeah,
I'm not doing the majority of the cooking this year. I'm going to some friend's house, which I'm really happy about doing. But I'm taking a whole bunch of stuff.
Oh yeah,
which are. In a way, it's sort of selfish because I want to make sure that...
Well, I was going to say, I know you, and I'm going to say you're very generous in that you don't mind doing it, but you also don't want to be left out of what you want there.
What I want.
What you want. You want it to be there.
I want it to be there. Yeah. I do want it to be there. So last year, I went to my friend's house too, same people, and to my friends Joe and Evan.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. And... I took sweet potatoes, my secret sweet potato recipe, and people were over the moon. So I'm going to tell you how to do those in case anybody's interested.
Yeah, absolutely.
So you make it's like a half a cup of, maybe five sweet potatoes, four or five, not giant ones, medium. And then a quarter to a half cup of maple syrup. And some cinnamon, nutmeg, cloves, and ginger. And about, four tablespoons of butter.
Mm-hmm.
And so then you mix all that syrupy stuff together. Mm-hmm. And you let it cook on the stove till it bubbles and it gets a little thicker. It's kind of thin when you
start. I'm sorry, what was the spice?
Oh, the regular, you know,
cinnamon, nutmeg,
like a pumpkin pie.
Okay.
Yeah. And then you simmer that syrup till it gets thick. It doesn't take very long, but it gets, you don't want to boil it. Just kind of simmer it till it gets thick.
Yeah.
And so you have four or five decent sized sweet potatoes, but not those giant ones. And slice them, peel them and slice them in about half inch slices.
Mm-hmm. Like little medallions?
Little medallions and parchment paper, of course, and lay them on the parchment paper on a flat pan. I use my half sheet pan. And then pour that syrup over them. And let them bake at about 350 for an hour.
Okay.
And then in the middle of the baking, kind of gently stir them. You don't want to stir them too; they'll fall apart if you like really stir them. But just kind of gently move them around so that they cook. And then the thing I like about these is they're very candied. I mean, they're candy for sure. Mm-hmm. But the thing I like about them is that you can serve them room temperature. So you can save your oven space for other things.
Oh, good
which
tip.
Is really nice because, you know, the oven space, a lot of times you just don't have room for everything that needs to go in there.
And dare I ask, are there mini marshmallows?
No. There could be.
There could be.
I mean, you know, it's always a choice for me because I love the mashy ones with marshmallows. Yeah. I love those too.
But you'd have to put it in a broiler after you did that.
Yeah.
To get them to melt.
Get
a little and
or get your blowtorch out.
You could do that. I have a blowtorch actually in my kitchen. Yeah. You could do that. So that's what I'm taking, and I'm taking my famous pecan pie, which is from the it's called USDA pecan pie.
Oh, good. I'm going to look at that.
And you can look that up on the web. And it's from the Farm Journal in 1971, I think. Farm mm-hmm. Journal cookbook. It's just a book of pies. Okay. And it uses the dreaded dark corn syrup, which I don't have a problem with. I mean, I don't know. Why was corn syrup so bashed for so long?
Well, because it's sort of not misinformation. It's just people are confused. They equate all corn syrup as the same. And while the stuff you don't want in you want is high fructose corn syrup.
Well, this is cane sugar.
Yeah, it's just
sugar. It's melty sugar.
It's not as bad as like the high fructose corn syrup.
Well, so is that fake?
So it's okay. No, there's just some.
Like,
there's,
what is that? It was
just in everything.
Yeah.
That was the problem.
Oh, okay.
Everything had corn syrup.
Yeah. Well, you can't make this pecan pie without it.
Well, you know, just to interject and support you fully, mm-hmm. I've tried so many recipes to get away from that, not using corn syrup.
Like maple syrup or
honey, all that stuff. I'm done with it. I'm going to do my just standard. I like the way, plus you, well, all the, here, you, sorry, I'm,
hello?
I'm getting so excited about pecan pie.
it is good.
I just basically follow those other traditional recipes, mm-hmm. but I double the number of pecans you put in it.
Oh, yes, I was going to say that. I think this recipe calls for a cup. Yeah. And don't ever chop them.
No.
Don't ever chop them.
Don't let me see you chopping those. Mm-mm.
Don't be chopping those pecans. Mm-mm. Put those in there and put 2 cups of them in there.
Yes, ma'am.
And, you know, people say, well, you know, it's like they float to the top or they sink to the bottom. Yeah,
yeah,
that's what happens. And then you've got that gorgeous.
And champagne has bubbles. Okay.
Yeah. Okay. You then know? Fine.
Exactly.
So I'm taking that and then the sinful dish of green bean casserole with mushroom soup and French fried onions on the top.
Oh, good. Do you do anything different than as far as do you use fresh green beans
or
do you
use
canned?
Oh, no, canned.
It really isn't as good with fresh green beans.
It isn't. You know, I've had it before where people make it. It's like this gourmet dish with fresh green beans, mm-mm. bechamel, almonds, you know, and it's like,
no,
this is grandma.
You need that sort of desecrated green bean in there.
Well, you can use French cut green beans, which is what a lot of recipes call
that's
for.
A good idea. Well,
but my hosts prefer cut green beans. So that's what I'm going to do.
What do you call those green beans that are kind of thready? I mean,
that's French cut.
That's French cut.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because I'm with you. I kind of like the chunky ones.
It's a mushier kind of.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's a smoother bite.
You know, I've done that with, I made 3-bean salad and I've tried it with with fresh green beans.
Mm-hmm.
It's a whole different creature.
I like fresh green beans.
And that actually is good. You get to, if you like, you can like either one. They're still good. But when I've done the canned one, you almost have to sort of rinse them out, dry them completely and let them sort of sit in the.
For a salad.
Yeah.
But you know, true confession.
Yeah.
Canned green beans are my favorite canned vegetable. Favorite, hands down. And I always have 4 or 5 cans in my pantry.
Really?
Because sometimes when I'm hungry at night and I don't want to cook and I'm not really hungry, I'll just pour them in a bowl and put salt and pepper on them and eat them cold.
Like room temperature.
Mm-hmm. I love them.
That's fascinating.
I love them. And it's protein.
Yeah.
You know, so I'm getting protein and I love them.
Green beans, right? Not black beans or kidney beans.
Just a can of green beans. Okay. And I told my son that one time and he said, Mom, he said, what's going to happen to you? He said, I'm going to come over someday and you're going to be sitting in your rocking chair surrounded by green bean cans.
Exactly. and Diego, your cat, playing with the cans, and you yelling at kids out the window, "Get off my lawn!
Get off my lawn!" Well, it doesn't happen very often, but that I really love canned green beans.
It is funny. We all have these sort of freak foods that we sort of eat and don't publicize. Mm-hmm. you know.
I think I came across that love of them in cafeteria lunches when I was in grade school, uh-huh, because it was about all that you could eat.
Yeah.
I mean, the rest of it, they made this, you know, the hamburger casserole with tomatoes and macaroni. Mm-hmm. So they made that quite often. And the only way that I could eat it was they would also serve whole wheat bread, and it was buttered, so I'd put the casserole, the macaroni, on the bread with the green beans on top of it and another slice of bread and eat it as a sandwich, and I could eat that.
Oh, my God.
And then I learned to cook.
Yeah, that would be a good impetus for learning to cook.
The only thing better would be if you put some blueberry jam on it as well.
Yeah, mm-hmm. No, I grew up going to Southern schools, and there was never a Southern cafeteria that didn't love runny navy bean, you know, those white beans
and runny.
And it was always in those, you know, those little pre-compartmentalized trays, mm-hmm, mm-hmm, and you always had some sloppy bean over there in the right corner, just like... And then there'd be like some collard green. It's like, yeah. Oh God.
Oh, you know? Yeah.
And you know, collard greens aren't bad, but I tell you, at a school, they don't really elevate them.
Well, they're not. Yeah. I like collard greens.
Well, they're kind of mushy, aren't they?
They have to cook a long time with some ham and some garlic.
Yeah. They used to have like little fat bacon, but like stuff you get
just
in
the
it.
Fat.
There's just the fat in there that we get. Yeah.
I know. So, yeah, that's my walk down memory lane for the terrible food that I'm addicted to sometimes.
Can I
share a recipe that I've been...
Sure.
Oh, and it's not a recipe. It's just something that I came across that I've been doing.
I had it
last night. That's why I'm thinking about it. If you buy kalbi, which is, you know, like a marinated...
The meat?
Yeah, oh, kalbi beef. Okay,
yeah. Take that, cut it into little cubes.
Uh-huh.
Stir fry it with the stir fry oil.
Gotcha.
And once you get that done, take it out and then put in chopped up baby bok choy and cook that.
Oh, I have some.
Throw the meat back in, stir it up, serve it on rice. It's awesome.
Oh,
a little soy sauce maybe.
Soy sauce maybe?
Yeah,
a little chili oil if you want it spicy.
Might, yeah.
But, Kalbi beef
good
is so
and
good.
Health. Yeah, mm-hmm. Healthy.
It's really good.
Healthy,
it's
that's
really good.
Not, yeah. It's not like a macaroni sandwich. So we were going to also talk about hostess gifts.
Oh, yeah.
I know we're saving a lot of it for Christmas, but right now
we can do a teaser.
We'll do a little teaser, yeah. So, you know, a lot of times, like I'm invited out and you're invited out for Thanksgiving, right? And so it's
as long as I take a shower and wear a clean shirt
and bring a pie
Yeah, I know.
It's really nice to take a little gift. And I know that at this time of year, it becomes expensive to be buying all these little things, you know, but Tom and I did a little research looking for nice hostess gifts under $20.
Yeah. For somebody, and these are sort of focused on, of course, on food.
Yeah, for foodies.
For foodies. Yeah.
Well, I found one that's really not focused on food. Well, kind of it is. I was in Urban Bloom earlier today, and if you want to keep it local, go to Urban Bloom and look at their wonderful trinkets and things they have in there for cooks and flowers. And I found a notebook. It's a gorgeous notebook with... it looks like early French painting mushrooms on the front, and they're outlined in gold, and it's just very beautiful. Mm-hmm. It's $4.
Awesome.
And it's beautiful. And then they have pens that go with it, or they have a little tiny notebook that you could buy too.
It's a very thoughtful price.
It's a thoughtful price, and I think it's a thoughtful gift because a lot of times... Some people, I don't do this, I think it's a wonderful idea, but I never get around to it, keep track of their recipes, or they keep track of what they cooked and what worked and what didn't
work.
How
big is the book?
It's like a 5x7.
5x7? Oh, that's a perfect size.
It's a perfect size. And then they have a little, like a pocket notebook thing too. And then I saw some gorgeous little coasters, and they have all kinds of homemade, like, lavender soaps. That's the other thing I'm thinking about, hostess gifts, you know. And I realize hostess is probably, are we supposed to say host? What are we,
yeah, I think host probably.
Probably.
Because, yeah, you know, I'm a man, I cook.
And you cook, and you're the host.
I'm a host.
I can call you the hostess if I want to.
Yeah.
Hostess, but I think one thing that we forget about for the people who are cooking is how tired they get. You know, it's a lot of work to do that dinner.
Totally.
And so something sort of spa-like, you know, nice smelling shower bomb or a bath bomb or something like that. Shower steamers, they're called.
Mm-hmm.
The other thing I thought about was herb scissors. Do you use herb scissors?
Oh, they're really cool.
Mm-hmm.
I don't have one, but they would.
I was given some herb scissors for Christmas one year, and I thought, oh, please.
Describe the herb scissor for our
friends. Well, it goes.
She's making a scissor motion, like rock, scissor, paper.
I'm sorry, you couldn't see that. But it has numerous blades.
Right.
It's fat.
It's like a multiple blades.
Yeah, you describe it.
It's basically, sort of the concept is, if you had three or four scissors and you tape them together.
Yes.
And then they could go up and down and they
but
cut.
But they only have one handle.
They only have one handle and they're really close together.
Yeah. And so I thought, oh, please, another gimmick.
Mm-hmm.
And it sat in my utensil drawer for a long, long time. And then one day I looked at it and I thought, you know, I either need to get rid of this or use it.
Mm-hmm.
So I thought, well, I'll just use it then. Oh my God, it changed my life.
Excellent.
It really did. I mean, when you're doing parsley or a whole bunch of basil and you want ribbons or you're doing all, it's just whack, 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 and you're done.
Yeah.
And it's a really nice hostess gift, I think,
even though
I was sort of put off by who would buy me that.
I've also, you know what I've seen also similar to, not necessarily a way to take care of herbs is I've seen local potters have these little herb bowls, so they call them.
Mm-hmm.
And it's basically just a what you'd think of a ceramic bowl
mm-hmm.
that's thrown usually. And then it has sort of a little lip that you can hold onto that's vertical with a hole in it.
And you can pull through the hole
and the hole's small enough to where it pulls all the leaves off, but the stem goes all the way through.
I wonder. Have you tried that?
Yeah, I have.
And?
A friend of mine had it. It was great. We did it with rosemary and thyme.
Cool.
Thyme is really great because thyme is tends to be
time consuming.
Thank you. But don't forget to tip your waitress. Be here all week. I didn't know why I didn't see that coming.
Clever.
She's a smart girl. Do you have any more?
I have tons.
Yeah.
I think face masks are great, you know, to lie back at night after the company's all gone. And I'm talking about the therapeutic ones that you put on your face and they warm up.
You're pretty, Linda. You don't have to wear a mask.
I was thinking of a little cat mask.
I know what you're saying.
Answer the door with your mask on.
Hi, I'm a kitten.
Yeah.
That's funny.
And tea. Tea is always
tea's
good.
Always good.
Tea's always good.
Yeah,
so,
you know.
What'd you come up with?
Well, so I was thinking of things that I would be delighted to get. They might be, like, you have to know the person well. Like, they have to
right.
be somebody who isn't going to look at you like you're insane. But, like, if somebody brought me a jar of vanilla paste, I would, like, kiss them on the mouth.
Be over the moon.
I would.
Oh, yes. Well,
you know,
back
vanilla
to the foodie thing. Sure.
Now, because it's something that's probably about $20.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
that's a nice gift. $20
It's a beautiful gift.
So vanilla flavoring is so expensive, and vanilla or vanilla paste is another thing
I love vanilla
you can
paste.
Get. Also, like, you could get somebody really good, if these are people that you want to get kitchen stuff for their for what they like, you have to sort of know them well, but like a block of really good baking chocolate, probably about $20, but it's such a treat to get something like that. Let's see what else. Parchment paper, rolls of, you could get somebody like fancy parchment papers and
You know, the other thing I was thinking of was tea towels. You know, everybody's tea towels are dirty and stained, and we all have maybe two or three that are decent.
I have so many. I have a mountain of them. They're all clean now. They're on my upstairs guest bed.
But are they nice, or are they worn out?
Not anymore. They're,
well, Yeah. I rest my case. Yeah. I mean, it's really nice to get fresh, clean, pretty linen, nice linen tea towel, you know, and you can get two of those for about $20.
My, I've gotten some over the years that are just really sweet and, they're charming and people look at me and sometimes they'll go like, did you buy this? And I'll go like, why, you don't think I would have a gingham chicken laying on eggs on my tea towel? You know? But they're so thoughtful.
I love tea towels. I love them.
I also think like another thing you can do is a lot of people have old rolling pins, and the ones that work really well are you can go to a place on the island like saw, but it's not called saw anymore. It's called Island Made or Vachon Made or something. Mm-hmm. Where French rolling pins, they're wooden rolling pins.
So nice.
And if you roll out dough, those are the way to go. Mm-hmm. Those are a good thing.
Are you like the French one that is like marble or ceramic?
No, it's on a lathe. It's usually like a hard maple, and the ends are more tapered.
Oh, I have a bamboo one where ends are tapered, it doesn't have the little handles.
No,
on
it's called.
I prefer that. You can be much more specific in your roll.
Yeah,
if you have a tapered.
And you know what my sister told me once was one of the best gifts I ever gave, or at least one that she just. Because she's a thrifty girl, but I bought her really good measuring. I bought her Cuisinart heavy stainless measuring cups, and their counterpart, their spoons.
Mm-hmm. They're so nice.
Yeah, and so she would never do that, so it was really fun because she goes, every time I cook, I think of you. So
well, and isn't it nice because those kinds of things we really tend not to buy for ourselves.
Yeah,
it's like extravagant, but of course you'd buy it for somebody else.
And, and you know, recently we just got some that they don't have square sides. I mean, they're round. The bowl itself is very round. The measuring cup is.
Uh-huh.
I mean, we have the square ones, you know. I mean, they're square side. And always stuff gets.
There's always stuff
These are almost like half egg shaped.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Those are great.
They're really nice.
And they pop right out. You can, you can stick them in your jars to scoop stuff easily.
And then they clean really easily.
Yeah. No, that's a good, really good tip, actually. Yeah. Hey, Linda, you know what else I was thinking?
What?
This weekend.
What?
Should I start calling you Clem or something? Hey, Clem. She goes all hillbilly. After when it's dark out, it's almost dark. It's close to 4. She goes all hillbilly. Put your shoes back on, woman.
Oh, stop it.
What was that? Oh, yeah. I wanted to say one thing I think is really a fun thing to do. Of course, the art studio tour is coming up.
Oh, yes.
That's fun. But the thing that happens before that, or the event that happens before that's on the second and third weekends of for the first full weekend of Christmas of December's, I think 6th and 7th, and then the next weekend for the art studio tour. But before that is the one called Jingle Bash, and Jingle Bash is really just a solid gift market, man. They have great vendors.
And where is that?
It's at the high school.
At the high school, but it's only one day, right?
One day, 10 to 3.
Yeah,
and they do a really nice job. God forbid I use this word. They curate.
Oh my God!
They curate a great list of vendors and makers. Mm-hmm. They also have food trucks, usually in the
they do
the atrium area of the high school. You know that they have that inner courtyard.
Yeah.
It's really set up really well. I really like it. I look forward to going to it. I usually find things. There's like everything from like John Daly's going
to
have leather goods, and
they're
ceramicists.
Yeah,
people who do herb gifts made out of herbs.
Speaking of hillbillies, who's from the south?
Girl, get my moonshine. But anyway, that's a really a fun thing to do on the Saturday. Is that the 29th or the 30th? What is that?
I don't know. It must be the 30th.
It's the 29th.
Oh, okay, thank you.
Yeah.
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 Well, golly Moses, we're running. Golly Moses. Oh, we got a few more minutes.
We still got some time.
Yeah.
We got time to bore these people witless.
We can bore them to death. I wanted to talk about. Oh,
do you talk what about my art and food thing, or the Sam thing? Or
we
can
talk about that. Yeah. So you went to a lecture over the weekend about the Seattle Art Museum is doing a farm to table exhibition through the end of January, I think.
Right. Paintings that are based in the age of Impressionism.
So in the late
1870 to 1900.
To 1900, okay. So I didn't know there was a lecture here that had to do with that. So tell me what you did.
Well, I don't have her spelling in front of me, but she's really good. Probably Dr. Albioni. And she lectured on it, and she is one sharp tack man. She knows.
Is she from the museum, from Seattle?
No,
museum,
she's from Vashon.
She's an art historian.
Yes, and she has lectures at VCA.
Right.
And she's a really good speaker. Number one is great. She's a good speaker. Like she's has the verve, the enthusiasm, the knowledge. And I was like going, wow, why am I coming to these more? I didn't know about them.
Uh-huh.
Now I do. So she talked about it and it was really interesting. She had a great slide set about and anything that was going to be in the show at Sam with about basically food. It had to do with food, and the subject matter was food and people, basically.
Farm to table.
Farm to table.
Right.
And if it had an asterisk, that was going to be something at the show.
Mm-hmm.
The one thing that she was quick to point out, which was really helpful, is that the thing that's sort of deceiving, like she said, if you go to the show and think you're going to be looking at a bunch of Monets and Gauguin and all these other people, and Vincent van Gogh, she said, not the case, because the sort of the descriptor is telling you they're paintings that are in the age of Impressionism, not necessarily Impressionist painters.
Right.
But there are
interesting way to put
mixture.
It, isn't it?
Yeah, there
is a Gauguin, though. I know that.
Yeah, they're really good. They're great. It's just really fascinating to learn about that time period in art and how they became Impressionists and then food. And then, like, you know, as she was saying, and this was considered naughty at the, because you had sort of the renegade painters, the Impressionists, and then you had the Academy painters, the establishment.
Mm-hmm.
And she, you know, that this one artist dared to do a painting with cabbage, you know?
Oh, gosh,
and it
not
was just
cabbage.
The lasciviousness of holding and breaking apart a cabbage.
Oh,
we know what that was about,
yeah,
don't we?
Yeah, we do.
Yeah.
I'll
never think of coleslaw the same way.
Well, Tom and I are going to journey over to
Seattle Town.
We're going to take the passenger ferry and go to this museum, to Seattle Art Museum, and see this exhibit.
Yeah,
we'll talk about that on our next show, because I think it'll be really interesting, and we'll learn something. I know we'll learn something.
We will, and you know, and just here's another plug for the city of Seattle. I got it. Do you have your senior pass card thing?
No.
Okay, I have an extra one because
okay,
they give
good.
You two. So anyway, kids, if you're a senior, kids, you can get these. You can get discounted admission into so many things
in
Seattle. It's unbelievable. So yeah.
So where do you get that card?
You just Google online. You go like a City of Seattle senior card, and then you fill it. You just fill out the app, and they send you these cards, and you show them, and it goes from being $50 at the aquarium to being $12.
Wow.
It's like craziness. Yeah. So if I have bad joints and have to run to the bathroom every 5 minutes, there's got to be something better for that kind of existence.
Yeah. So we'll have a report.
Absolutely.
We will have a report. And I'm reading right now some academic article by Ruth Reichel, who is talking about the origins of farm to table, which actually happened in the 1700s in France. So this was like an event, like a thing then. So we'll be able to talk about the food history and how that evolved into this Impressionist period.
Yeah, and that's great. That'll be really interesting because
she's great.
In the lecture, she was touching on that. You know, France, Italy too, but France in this period of time, like Italy kind of did a lot of bringing stuff to France.
Yeah, true.
Through Catherine de' Medici, I think. But anyway, but boy, when France got a hold of making good food,
they
didn't let go.
They have the corner on that market.
They do.
So.
But do they have corn nuts? No.
Do they eat macaroni sandwiches?
No.
No.
That's right. Dude, peanut butter is not to be found on a Parisian shelf anywhere.
Yeah, I bet not. I don't know. No. I don't think so. Well,
dang.
I think our hour is up.
No
already.
Way.
Yeah, that went really fast. And we still have a big list of items to talk about.
Yeah,
so
Pie dough next time.
Well, we can do that next time.
Okay, I'll do it next
time.
Yeah,
we'll do pie dough next time because Tom has some secrets about pie dough.
Darn tootin', sister.
Mm-hmm. So thank you for listening. And please check in with our Facebook page. Please, please, please let us know that
What's
you're there.
What's our Facebook page? Stirring the Pot.
Stirring the Pot. It's, right. It's there. There we are. We'll have some recipes for you. And we'd love your comments. So thank you all for listening. And we will see you in 2 weeks.
All right. Thanks for sharing your
time with us. Happy Thanksgiving, everybody.
Happy Thanksgiving.
Yes. Bye-bye.
Thank you, Truman.